you as it takes you eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share. Play it loud.
All right, my brothers and sisters, indeed, peace to our wonderful roundtable guest today, and indeed a very warm welcome to everyone tuning in at the Black Roundtable. Our fantastic guests today are calling in from around the country. First, let's welcome our sister, who is no stranger to our airwaves. She's holding it up for the ATL, and we'll introduce everybody all at one time, and it is Sister Yolanda. We're going to welcome her. Then we have a brother checking in from the real deal. That's New York City. He's a gentleman and a scholar, and that's Brother Carl Johnson. We call him CJ. And then we want to say peace to my brother, our brother. And we wouldn't be complete if the man with the plan was not here himself representing the central zone of the United States, specifically speaking. He's a mover and a shaker from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, and that's our brother, Charleston White. I want to say thank you to all of you, and for taking your time to have a seat at the Black Roundtable here on NEA 2X Radio, the voice of the people. Peace to everyone, indeed. How are you?
Mighty fine, mighty fine.
Glad to hear it.
Doing fabulous, thank you.
Absolutely.
Doing fantastic, sister. Peace and blessings.
Yes, indeed. All right, so we are representing the Northeast, the Southeast, and is that considered the Midwest in Fort Worth, Texas, Brother Charleston?
Well, it will be considered. Actually, Fort Worth is where the West begins, so yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, we're excited to have you here, indeed. As you know, we all said tonight, we're going to change up things just a little bit on the Black Roundtable discussion tonight, and we're going to go down memory lane, indeed, because so many people forget things that we should remember, but we are so bombarded with the election, and it's on and on and on and on, and then when it comes to important matters, to the black experience, it kind of gets pushed to the end or behind, and we don't even talk about it, and then we're not passing it to our children. So we're going to go down memory lane in just a few and talk about some events that are very significant and important to black people. How about that, everybody?
How about it?
Hey, that sounds like a plan to me, sister.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay, well, excuse me, please. Okay, well, we'll start with you, Brother Charleston White, and talk about O.J. Simpson in the year of 1995. In fact, it was October 3rd, a verdict came down in the O.J. Simpson case where Nicole Brown Simpson was murdered, and along with Ron Goldman being murdered, and the country was very on edge about the trial of O.J. Simpson, and the country was very divided. If I remember,
yes,
the
ma'am.
Media, he had been convicted already in the media, but that's just my small opinion. Brother Charleston, please share your opinion of where you were when you heard the verdict of not guilty for Brother O.J. Simpson.
I was incarcerated in our state's juvenile justice system. I was probably, I had just gotten back from court, and in my distorted mind, I felt like O.J. had beat the system. And so October 1995, I was sitting in our Texas Youth Commission with a 12-year sentence for murder, and I had 4 years into that 12-year sentence, and I, too, had just went back before a court system that was trying to transfer me to the adult prison system, and I beat that system. So I was celebrating with OJ with a distorted mindset of, because I thought he did it, and I just thought he had beat the system. And at that time, with my mindset that I had, I was just celebrating the fact that a black man had beat the criminal justice system along with myself.
And see, that's why I like you, brother, because you are honest and you keep it real indeed. So what was your age?
I had just turned 18 in May of that year, and so I was still wrestling and struggling with you know, trying to find an identity, still dealing with anger and resentment toward the system and white people in general. So, you know, I was a very a troubled child during that time.
I see, my brother. I see. Yes, sir, because were you picking up the vibes from the racial tension and division that particular trial caused? And we're, you know,
yes, ma'am.
At 18, and you had so much on your mind. I mean, you're trying to, you know, pay attention to your own freedom, but do you remember any of that serious racial tension at that time?
Yes, ma'am. I recall very vividly media reports, talk shows, you know, just even some of the correctional officers coming in and overhearing some of their opinions and inputs of the trial. And so I can remember, you know, scores of young black men rooting for him, whether he was guilty or not guilty. We just wanted to see a black man finally beat the system. And so what that gave us, that had given us something that we've been dreaming and wishing and fantasizing for, an opportunity to witness or be a part of. And so for us, that was, you know, as horrific as that sounds, it was something tangible for the black community to be able to say one of ours were able to beat it.
I see, because just like you admitted, in your thinking, he was guilty. Okay,
yes,
let's
ma'am.
Go to Brother CJ and hear where he was when you heard the verdict, and also share your opinion, what was going on around you at that time, please.
Well, I was here in New York City. Had just got back from the Midwest 2 years after my mom passed away in 93, I came back to take care of her. So that trial sort of helped me go through the anxiety levels I had taking care of my mom. But once I start keying in on the dynamics of that trial, I'm like Mr. White, only I'm a mystery guy. I like a mystery. So it became a mystery for me. Did he or did he not? Did he or did he not? But then for me, Mr. Cochran became my focus. And what I'm saying basically is anything that has to do with any important matters that my people are involved with, I want to see them exercise skills. I want to see them show whoever they're up against, that they know what they're doing. And so Mr. Cochran, and I think everybody will agree with this, Mr. Cochran became more of a story than the trial. Because like Mr. White was saying, he was tearing them apart. Every time they come up with something, he would knock it out. And then he clinched it with that glove. And when he did that glove, I knew when he did the glove that O.J. wasn't going to be convicted. So
yeah,
for me,
you should have quit.
Yeah. I knew it then, you know, because that fit and quit thing was reasonable doubt. That was it.
Yes.
He created reasonable doubt. So basically what I'm saying is that the trial for me was more of a mystery that I needed to be solved. And it also alleviated, again, some of the anguish I was going through after my mother's passing. So that trial kind of lifted me past a lot of grieving. And I did celebrate too, but I didn't celebrate OJ. I celebrated Johnny Cochran. So that's my perspective on that.
Yes, indeed. For people that are just tuning in, that was Brother CJ. And Brother CJ is calling in from New York City. And when he says Johnny Cochran to our young people, that is the late, great attorney. Indeed, he was a very effective, serious, hard-fighting soldier attorney, Johnny Cochran. And he was the final lawyer for O.J. Simpson during that trial, because at that time, when it first happened, O.J. Simpson had other attorneys, and finally he and Johnny Cochran became his principal attorney and was able to get him the acquittal. Before I go to Sister Yolanda, I wanted to say that I thought O.J. was innocent because of a lack of evidence from the blood that was prevalent anywhere and everywhere in that horrible crime scene. And if we remember, Mr. O.J. was supposed to take a flight that night, and he did. I think he was 30 minutes late or something. But to have the officers come to his home the next day, and they actually took apart his bathtub, the pipes. They were looking for the evidence, and they took apart his sink in the restroom. No evidence. And that led me to believe charging him with the actual first-degree murder wasn't right. Maybe if they had charged him with conspiracy to murder, maybe. You know, that's something we won't know, but I don't believe he was guilty. Let's see if we can weigh in with our sister from Atlanta, Georgia, the ATL indeed. Now, she is no stranger, like Brother CJ calling here for the Black Round Table, and that is, of course, Sister Yolanda. And I mean, Sister Yolanda is going to tell it like it is. That's what we love about you too, sis.
I love you all too, and greetings from the ATL. And I actually was at work, and there was a lot of racial tension. I recall there being some verbal altercations, and it was just a bad, you could just feel the tension in the air at my job. So that's where I was when that happened.
And when it happened, prior to the verdict, what were your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you. I did not think he was guilty because the time frame just didn't add up. A lot of the evidence didn't match, and I just think that they were just trying to find an easy way to convict him, but they couldn't. So as a result, I feel they just kept looking for something to charge him with, and ultimately they did, with trying to reclaim his own property.
Yes, ma'am, because as you're stating, that no good Mark Furman, the lead detective, he and then others that just walked through the crime scene, contaminated the crime scene.
Yes.
Brother CJ said, reasonable doubt was everywhere, and it just helped O.J. Simpson's case, and he was able to be acquitted of murder of those two innocent people. So thank you for your thoughts on that. Let's move right along on the round table. We're going down memory lane, talking about issues that are very critically important to Black people. And that is, where were you when you heard the death of Michael Jackson? Now, that took place June 25th, 2009. 9. We'll start with you, Brother Charleston, and he's calling in again from Dallas-Fort Worth, Brother Charleston White.
So you say, where was I when Michael Jackson? Man, all these important dates, I ain't going to say I'm embarrassed or ashamed or sure what I was doing, but when the day Michael Jackson got died, I was sitting at a partner's house. He had called me, and I'm just going to be as transparent as I can be, because, you know, I'm going to keep it real. My partner, I was selling weed, and my partner had called me to bring him 25 pounds of weed only to set me up to be robbed by somebody. So the day Michael Jackson died, I was set up to be robbed by my right-hand man. So that's and God used that situation, because probably a week or two prior to that, I was riding home one night and was having a talk with God, and I told God, I said, God, don't you do nothing to make me exit out of this life. Let me get out on my own. But God knew that it was something inside of me that probably would have went another 2 or 3 years living that kind of life. So he allowed that situation, man. And my best friend, he set me up to get robbed. They got like 25 pounds of weed and $1,200 a pop and like $10,000 to $12,000 out of my pocket. And so that was a life-changing day and event. And from that point on, I went and got in college, and my whole life changed.
Yes, indeed. I mean, this brother's life is on an interview we did right here on Nia 2X Radio, the voice of the people, Brother Charleston White. And now he is with an organization called Hype. He's helping young people excel. Make no mistake about it. So, but back to you again, though, Brother Charleston. So, when that happened, it wasn't no talk of Michael Jackson. I mean, your life is on the line, and the rest of the evening played out as you've just described.
Right when everything came across the screen and said that Michael Jackson was found dead, I was hit across the head with a pistol. So I didn't get the.
Wow!
I didn't get. Yeah, I didn't really get to soak everything up. After, you know, I was worried about, you know, who I had to pay back and this and that. But I just remember sitting, you know, at my boy's spot, looking through the bag, come across the screen, Michael Jackson just been found dead in his home, knock on the door, probably 30 seconds later, you know, my head split from a gun, you know, from a gun hit me inside the head.
Wow. I mean, you know, and that's what you do on Nia 2X Radio. It's about keeping it real. We're black brothers and sisters, and we go through these things all the time, sometimes. And if it's not us, it's somebody in our families. And that's why I love my brother Charleston White, because he keeps it real. And a fantastic story on his life. I just can't say it enough. I may come back to you, brother, after a couple days after that incident and get some thoughts. But we're going to move to Sister Yolanda and get her thoughts of where she was on that day, June 25th, 2009, and we heard not the King of Pop. I'm talking about the King, huh? He wasn't no just King of Pop. Michael Jackson, we grew up with MJ and his brothers and his family.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. He was way more than the King of Pop.
He was the master. He was the master of music and dance for sure of his day. And dance.
So, sister, share your thoughts, please.
I tell you, that day, my mom, I was taking my mom somewhere, and I distinctly remember her telling me, did you hear that Michael Jackson, if he hadn't passed away when I found out, you know, he was ill. But I had to pull over because I love Michael Jackson. And I was devastated shortly while we were driving. They announced that he had passed. And I just have to go a little beyond that, because I really feel it was a conspiracy to kill this man. I know that wasn't your question, but
No, that's fine. This is your opinion. Share your opinion with us, please.
It is my opinion that based on the facts, And based on another contaminated crime scene, which it really was a crime scene, that doctor was performing procedures that should have been performed in a hospital or either an urgent care facility, giving him propofol, you know, and leaving him on a bed instead of to try to resuscitate him. When you try to give someone CPR, they're supposed to be on a flat, hard surface like the floor or a hard table if necessary. But I just feel that just over the years and the different information that has been disclosed, and that he was worth more dead than he was alive.
Oh, good point, good point. Yes, indeed, because there's a lot of talk. I remember Minister Farrakhan that Sunday, the following Sunday, after Michael Jackson was pronounced dead, and people can get that particular DVD, he gave some interesting facts and information how Michael Jackson had called him en route to London, and how and the conversation that they shared. So we're going to hit with Brother CJ after we take this quick commercial break. We want to say thank you to all of the guests today, and, of course, thank you to our sponsors that make it all possible right here on NIA 2X Radio, the voice of the people. We're going to have a quick commercial break and come right back and find out where our brother CJ was when he heard about the death of Michael Jackson. I'm NIA 2X, and I'll be right back with you after this quick commercial break. Keep it right here. All right, now, Dr. Bruce Bridges has written one of the most mind-changing literatures of the century. His prolific book is titled Recapturing the African Mind. This reading brings the understanding of the myriad of questions often asked about the black experience historically, currently, and it helps to channel a positive direction for the future of black people. Recapturing the African Mind, an excellent, comprehensive, but forward-thinking and interesting book of all time. This is fine reading for homes, schools, and individuals. Recapturing the African Mind by Dr. Bruce Bridges. Order your copy today. You can phone him at 919-218-8620. That's 919-218-8620. Recapturing the African Mind, a great and excellent reading. All right, now, back in the studios with our guest, we have Brother Charleston White calling in from Dallas-Fort Worth, and that's in Texas, of course. We also have calling in from the big, beautiful Red Apple, and that is Brother CJ holding it down for New York City, and our sister holding up the ATL, and that is Sister Yolanda right here on NIA 2X Radio. We're at the round table discussing topics down memory lane, and when we left for the break, we were ready to hear what our brother CJ from New York City, where he was when he heard the announcement of the death of the king, the master of music in our day and time, one of them for sure, and that is Michael Jackson. Where were you on that day, sir? June 25th, 2009.
Well, I had just moved into a new beautiful space in Harlem. Actually, I was moving back to Harlem from the Bronx. And so I had been out of touch with a lot of friends and close people that I grew up with. I hadn't set up my TV or much of anything in my new space, and I got a call from a family, a father and his three sons. They're my godsons, and the father called me, and he said, CJ, Michael Jackson just died, and I need you to come over to our house right away. So he said it so fast, I'm thinking about, why did I got to go over his house right away? Okay, I didn't even think about what he said. I mean, why I got to go to his house right away, you know? And on the way over, I still ain't thinking. It didn't hit me. But when I got there, he said, I had to call you because I need you to go and talk to the boys. I haven't seen young men. I hadn't seen young men in that state of grieving. I had never seen that, you know? Mm-hmm. And once I saw that, then it hit me. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Jackson. And I didn't believe it. You know how sometimes you have that disbelief. If it's somebody you really care about, you know, it's happened to me a few times. Oh, so-and-so died. No, he didn't. That's, you know, no. I don't want to hear that. He ain't dead. I did that a couple of times. But when I saw them, it hit me. And all I could do was just stand in shock. And then the father came over, and he joined them. Because he was a bigger fan of Michael Jackson than they was. So I'm here in this crying party, you know, and I'm going, holy moly, you know. So I just sat down with them. I asked them to move in a circle. And I said, let's hold hands. And I felt that was my way of saying goodbye to Michael, too. I was objective about it, you know. And I really am kind of glad that they had called me. I don't know what I would have been able to do alone hearing it, but being with the whole family holding hands and us acknowledging Michael Jackson's demise, it was really sort of like I can't describe it, you know, but it was a healing process. The beginning of a healing process, because a couple of them didn't get over it ever. There's two of them that never have gotten over Michael's passing. And if I hadn't have done that, I don't know, like I said, I would have responded. But one of the things that you said, Sister Nia, that Michael Jackson was more than just a pop star. And I don't know if everybody saw the movie that he made. I forgot the name of that movie, but it was a movie showing that how he was coming back to do a new show and how he was developing the show. That movie got you in touch with who Michael Jackson was. He's the greatest entertainer of all times. Period.
No doubt about it. Michael,
I mean,
Jackson,
God gives everybody gifts. The
yes,
gifts
sir.
that young man had is off the hook. No one's ever going to out-entertain Michael Jackson.
Make no mistake about it. Everybody remember,
yeah,
I think it was 1984.
Right now.
When that brother moonwalked,
I got his pictures
when
up
he
in my
moonwalked
house.
That
you
night.
Come in my door, you see Michael Jackson. You turn the corner, you see young Michael Jackson.
Hey, look, but let me ask y'all. Do y'all remember the night
Hello?
The whole world froze?
Hello?
World. I'm not talking about just a few people. The entire
Are you there?
Planet. He had that album with Billie Jean on it. And
Hello.
Brother. Yeah.
No.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
When I came in, I heard it click. I thought you needed to jump. So.
No.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, sister.
Okay. Do you remember the night? Can you hear me, Brother CJ?
I can hear you.
Brother CJ, this happened to his phone the last call, if we remember, Sister Yolanda. Something had happened, and we lost him, and he came back, and we hope that happens this time. But do y'all remember that night while he's getting it together when Michael Jackson moonwalked during the anniversary or something about the Jackson 5? Can you hear me?
You talking about the Motown show when you did the moonwalk?
Yeah, y'all remember that one?
Yeah, that was the Motown anniversary.
Right, I think it was 25 years because it was the Jackson 5, and then Mike came out and did his thing. But if I remember right, but I mean to tell you, people almost had to go to hospital. We talked about it. It was the talk of the world the next day.
And I dropped
Michael Jackson. Ain't no doubt about it. So look, we.
Did I drop?
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
Did I drop?
Oh yes, I think you did. But you're here now. We called for you, and I remember the last time this happened. Maybe if you're moving around or something, it's just modern technology has to get a little
okay.
more modern. There's nothing you're doing,
okay.
I'm sure.
All
right. But I appreciate your comments. Let's move right along. We're going down memory lane if you're just tuning in to the Black Round Table. And you know it. It is Brother CJ from out of New York, Brother Charleston White from out of Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, Sister Yolanda calling in from Atlanta, Georgia. Now we want to know where you were, Brother Carlton. Brother Carl, when you heard about the very important Million Man March, October 16th, 1995, an event that is not talked about enough, and that's just my small opinion. We'll start with you, Brother CJ.
Well, I was up in the Bronx helping organize some of the people, you know, before the Million Man March. I didn't get to go, but I helped organize up on 163rd Street and Kenton Avenue. They had a community center there, and some of my buddies asked me to come over because I'm pretty good at organizing and getting the little details and, you know, stuff that you need to put together for a trip like that. You know,
how many buses do you think or know came out of New York City, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, I only know what came out of the Bronx, you know, in our area. And our area, we had like 23 buses from that little small area. They call it the South Bronx, but it's like, let me see. I can't even describe the neighborhood because I'm not a Bronxite, but it's sort of like maybe
a
radio.
It's a small area. No, that's no
problem. Yeah, small area. Yeah, small area. Yeah, small area.
I want to stay on the Million Man March because there is not a man or woman or group or organization anywhere in this country who was able to produce what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan did October 16th, 1995, and not one since. Sister Yolanda, please share your thoughts about the Million Man March taking place here in Washington, D.C. on that fabulous date, October 16th, 1995, please.
Well, at that time, I had recently relocated from Evanston, Illinois, which is a suburb right outside of Chicago, to Atlanta. I actually moved to Stone Mountain. That was the first one of the first suburbs I moved in. And I know there was a lot of excitement about it, and people were trying to go by bus, by car, by train, by plane. It was a lot of conversation about it, and it was exciting. You know, I just was at that time felt that, well, why just the men? Although I understand now, but then I didn't. You know, I didn't understand why it wasn't inclusive of everyone. But that's where I was. I was reacclimating myself to the South And a lot of people here, I'll say other races, didn't understand, and there was a lot of pushback for people trying to get off of their jobs and that work, you know, in corporate America. So that's what I recall about it. I thought it was a beautiful time, and I, as you say, nothing, there has never been another gathering that large and that peaceful since.
Yes, indeed. Brother Charleston, 1995, October 16th, share your thoughts about the Million Man March, please.
Can y'all hear me good?
Yes, sir.
October 95, Million Man March. I'm going to be honest again, sister. You know, I was a part of that faction of young black men who didn't care nothing about the Million Man March, because we were submerged in the gang culture. You know, the Bloods and the Crips, you know, during 95, the early 90s up until 95, you know, we was blinded by social consciousness because of the gang culture, the subculture of the gang. And so we was divided. And so we heard about it, we saw it on television, but, you know, our mind was so twisted and distorted around the belief system of the gang culture. Black unity was an illusion in our minds, because what meant more to us and to millions of faction of young men during that time was your gang colors. So my greatest enemy and my greatest threat at the time of the Million Man March was another black man.
Well, that's very interesting. That is very interesting. Many
that's
people at Sister Yolanda
I'd like
stated,
to hear that. I got a godson that was up in that.
Excuse me?
I've been talking to him
CJ,
about
go
that
ahead,
lately.
Sir. Brother CJ, you were saying?
I was saying Mr. White just gave me some enlightenment, because I got a godson that was in that culture, and he's still incarcerated because of that culture, because the culture went into the prison systems and grew in there. And he's still in the system because doing things, gang-related, rebellious things, he got more charges in jail than he had before he got to jail.
Well, that's a whole different subject, because
yeah.
You said the key words, culture, the culture yeah. of the prison system. And I can't say enough, when you get an opportunity to hear this leader on the telephone with us at the Black Round Table, and that's Brother Charleston White, because mm-hmm. he has no problem of talking about who he was. Make no mistake
mm-hmm.
about it. The big word in that sentence is definitely was. And
mm-hmm.
something happened to him, and his story is on Near 2X Radio, the voice of the people. Whenever you'd like to hear it, it will turn your life to hear where this young man has come from. That's one part. It's not really where he came from. It's what had happened to him, how it happened to him, a spiritual evolution, and where he is not now, but where he is constantly going. It's really wonderful how our Father uses all of us. It reminds me of Malcolm X being used to go into a lifestyle where he was, and then now he winded up on a postage stamp. So it's not where we were, is about where we are and where we're going. Back to the Million Man March as we move rapidly along. Sister Yolanda mentioned that they weren't really clear of why the brothers were called. But the three main reasons, one was for atonement to God, trying and attempting to reach Brother Charleston and the culture that we spoke about previously, to atone our ways to God. Two, it was for reconciliation. to reconcile our differences with our brothers. If somebody kick your shoe, it doesn't mean you have to take them out. You know, it was about reconciling the differences with the men. And then three was responsibility, men taking responsibility of their communities, of their homes, of their selves, and being responsible to their wives and to their children, whether they were with their wives or girlfriends or not. So those were the three main reasons the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan called for the brothers to come as head of the household, head of the community, the muscle of the community, if you will, to get them together. And then he asked the sisters to not go to school or work that day and not to send the children, but to be found in a mosque or in a church while the brothers were out meeting with one another. And as Sister Yolanda said, history shows 1.5 to 2 million black men came peacefully, respectfully. They were crying and holding each other up because there was a spirit there, and out of that spirit came the saying, "Long lives the spirit of the Million Man March." Thank you for sharing your ideas, panel. Our panel tonight, as we go into a commercial break in about a minute or so, is Sister Yolanda from the ATL, Brother CJ, New York City, Brother Charleston White, Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. So we're going to another Where Were You, the time Nelson Mandela was released from prison, and of course, being in prison 27 years. Brother Charleston, I'll start with you. And we know a lot of your background, but we want to hear it anyway because it helps us reach others today and understand that strong mindset that you had at that time. And that took place February 11th, 1990. What was going on with you when you heard about him being released?
February 11th, 1990, I was in the 8th grade. And I remember televisions being played in the classroom. I remember one of our African-American teachers, it was an English class. I remember her having a television playing in class around the media attention concerning his release. But from a personal standpoint, I remember as a kid watching the movie about him being locked up. And so to see the movie and have, you know, have an opportunity to witness him coming home, it meant something. Whether I understood it or not, it meant something because I understood his struggle. Because I, you know, at that time in my life, I was kind of, you know, going through that pre-adolescent stage where children are began to rebel. And so I was getting ready to enter into a journey similar to that of the great Nelson Mandela. And so because I saw the movie as a child, and then I went into an institution in society that solidified what I saw in the movie by showing me interest into his release.
I see. Yes, indeed. What a day. Sister Yolanda, where were you and what are your thoughts about that day that Nelson Mandela was released from a 27-year prison sentence?
Well, I was in class, and I recall that I was a freshman in college. And I was in Chicago, and I recall prior to that, you know, seeing people trying to galvanize for him and the media suppressing any and all information about him. You really had to be conscious, meaning conscious of what was going on that amongst our people that wasn't being televised. And that's where I was. And I remember people being very celebratory. Everybody was excited.
and pissed off at the same time. That brother was
yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Was
brother CJ.
To all that.
Ma'am?
I said that the brother had been subjected to all that just because he wanted his rights. You know, I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, truly unbelievable. It adds to the 12 wonders of the world. Brother CJ, Nelson Mandela released from jail February 11th, 1990. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was still living in Wisconsin at that time, and I'm going to put a veil of senility over exactly where I was at. But I remember in Madison, Wisconsin, they were some of the biggest Mandela apartheid activists in this country. And the whole University of Wisconsin campus, you know, just kind of like took over the city celebrating. That's what I remember. Like I said, I don't remember exactly where I was at, but I remember what happened in Madison, Wisconsin, when Mr. Mandela was released. The campus.
What happened?
Which, the campus in the University of Wisconsin campus is one of the greatest anti-war, anti-anything that's got to do with injustice, sort of like Columbia University here in New York. You know, they are very strong-willed and very forceful in making their advocacy known to the world. They don't just go national. They go international. So when Mandela was released, or, you know, that was it. That was a big thing. You know, that was a big, big thing.
And what really made it big was he was released, and then in a couple of years or months or so, he became the president of the country that held him in bondage for 27 years. Indeed, black people, we have a story like no other people on the planet. I'm trying to tell you, 27 years. And I know Brother Charleston White, I'm interested in your opinion about the fact of Nelson Mandela's accomplishments, getting out of jail and becoming the president of his country in what we called Azania, renamed South Africa.
Well, sister, all I can add to that, man, is God is amazing.
Come on.
Because if man had his way, Nelson Mandela wouldn't have never been able to accomplish that coming out of prison.
That's right.
Prisoners are outcasted in any society. So for a man not just to come out of prison and get a job or get a degree, but to come out and become the president and leader of a country, you know, can't nobody do that or ordain that but God.
That's right.
And so here it is in 2016, because prior to Nelson Mandela, we have never seen an ex-convict or ex-prisoner come out and become a great leader of a nation. The world had never saw that before, right? He was the first example. I believe in 2016, God is resurrecting dry bones. He's creating and creating more Nelson Mandela, except we're going to be leaders in our communities, of our own nations, in our own backyard, in our own states, in our own counties. And so I'm actually riding right now. I just got through speaking at a prestigious university, Texas A&M University here in Texas, and I'm actually riding in a car with a guy by the name of George Toker, who spent 30 years in Louisiana Angola State Penitentiary for a crime that he didn't commit. And it took the highest court of the land, which was the Supreme Court, to overturn his decision just to get him out after serving 30 years for a wrongful conviction for a murder that he did not commit.
So I have my own Nelson Mandela riding with me right now.
All right. Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Glory to God.
Yes, indeed.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
White from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. We want to pay a few bills and thank our sponsors because without them, we could not have the Black Round Table where we can express ourselves. We're saying it loud because we're black and we're proud. Keep it right here. I'm Nia 2X. I'll be right back. It's Sports Talk. That's right. It's Sports Talk. Fans, listen up. Brother Trey has the hottest, fastest growing sports talk show around. He makes you think, he makes you laugh, and his talk show unveils and exposes the core of each topic. It's Sports Talk for the sports fan that really love, breathe, walk, and talk sports. Nothing's off the table on Sports Talk with Brother Trey and his wide range of guests or panelists and their subjects. Join Brother Trey and don't miss him and his exciting, interesting, and informative shows. And you can hear his shows as much as you like by replaying them for your convenience. Sports Talk with Brother Trey for sports fans who simply love the game. Catch him right here bi-weekly on Nia 2X Radio on Thursday evenings at 9:30 p.m., the voice of the people right here, Nia 2X Radio. Sports Talk with Brother Trey. All right, back in the studio, Brother Charleston White, set it off. Make no mistake about it, that's the Black Round Table for you. He took his hand and slammed down on the table, and we love it and want more of it. Sister Yolanda, oh, you gave your explanation. I tell you, that brother lit me up. But, sister, you gave your opinion, right? You were in school. Okay. We have a few more before we end tonight here at the round table. We're talking about subjects that are important to black people, subjects that we need to be teaching our children. We're finding out that a lot of black history has been taken away from colleges and universities, and from, you know, if they're taking them out of the colleges and universities, then we're hearing the stories of others and not ourselves, and the contributions black people constantly make every day, all the time, to the upliftment of humanity is just remarkable. There is no other people ever like the original black man and black woman here in this universe and on this planet. We are a very unique, wonderful, extraordinary, blessed people. And I'm not bragging. Don't get me wrong. I'm just acknowledging and praising the Lord for seeing that the black man and the black woman were the original or are the original people of the planet. And I can't be bragging because we don't talk about it enough. So we're going to move to the next subject that's important to black people. Where were you, Sister Yolanda, when you heard of the assassination of the great late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on a Thursday, April 4th, 1968. Now, I don't know if you were in Pampers or had a pacifier, but you tell us all about it, please.
Well, I'm not going to disclose my age. However, I remember being at home, and I just remember not understanding why my mom was crying. And she was washing dishes at the kitchen sink. And I'll never forget it. And I was just looking at the TV and looking at all the turmoil and remembering just, you know, how sad everybody was. And she was just telling me that it was our leader. She said it was the brother that was, well, she didn't say the brother, but, you know, he was the civil rights leader to help us get equality in a country that did not like us. So that's what I recall about about it, and just Chicago going up in flames, a lot of the city and a lot of our schools were closed. And I remember going to a school, they called them Freedom Schools. So a lot of the children that were in elementary schools, we went to Freedom Schools. And that's what I recall about it.
They
educated us about, you know, further educated us about what was going on and why all the turmoil, why they shut the schools down for safety precautions.
Okay. We are getting close to that time. Brother CJ, April 4th, 1968, around 6 p.m. when it was announced on the news, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had died from a gunshot. Please share your thoughts.
Well, in Harlem, we stay out on the streets day and night. So basically, the news came to us on the street. And when it came, and I'm going to be put my modesty aside for a minute. One of the things about the neighborhood that I lived in, it's right in the center of Harlem, close by 125th Street, St. Nicholas neighborhood, Morningside neighborhood. We kind of like have brotherhoods. I mean, this was before the gang stuff. We had brotherhoods. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody's down together. So we had a community reaction in our neighborhood. And this is what I'm putting my modesty aside for. We did not think about doing anything stupid like rioting or, you know, messing up anything because that's our neighborhood. We didn't think about that. In fact, a couple of days later, H.R.A.P. Brown came up there. I don't know if y'all remember him, but he came up there talking about, oh, we're going to start a revolution. And we said, no, no, you don't come to this neighborhood, tell us what we're going to do. You know, you go back to where you came from. But at any rate, we mauled in the streets for days, a couple of days. And we had, and this is a very important point. At that time, there was a mayor called John Lindsay, and he was very popular with black folks all across the city. In fact, we put him in office. And he was smart enough to come, not just when he was campaigning, but after he won the election, he used to visit black neighborhoods all over the city, just walk through and get to know people. And that's what he did. He came up to Harlem. He asked people how they felt. And people knew him. The police had their barricades up. After he talked to the people and he saw the people wasn't thinking about doing nothing crazy, he told the police, take the barricades down. Now, these some fools taking the barricades down, ready to do their racist thing, waiting for riot. I'm talking about police now. These police, they was chomping at the bits. They wanted a riot because they love to hit people with village, especially if you're black. When he told them to take the barricades down, a couple of them started acting stupid, and some skirmishes started, and John Lindsay saw the skirmishes, went over, calmed the people down, calmed the cops down, and it didn't escalate. But I did get a scar. I got a scar right now from that because I was right there where these fools started acting up with us, calling us the big N-word, and, you know, boom, they provoked. And
okay,
so
they provoked. That was a very good description of what was happening in Harlem,
yes.
New York. We're coming, we're running out of time, brother. Don't mean
okay.
to cut you off, but you
no
really
problem.
Gave a very good description. We want to make sure we hear from Brother Charleston White. If he was born in 1968. Were you born, brother?
No, ma'am, I was not born. I was born in 1977.
Well, let me ask you anyway. Real quick, because we are coming to the end of time, everyone. Brother, what when you heard about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., how old were you, Brother Charles? Charleston?
I believe I first heard about Dr. Martin Luther King around the age of 7.
What was your impression of hearing about him around, and what year was that, sir? And were you, what was that, like the 1970s?
1984, 85. I really didn't draw an impression of Dr. King until I wrote I Have a Dream speech in the fourth grade. And as I got older, I've always questioned, why is it that we only know about Dr. King? Why did I have to self-learn about a Medgar Evers? Why did I have to, you know, the school didn't teach me about Frederick Douglass. And so now, as an adult, I truly understand when Dr. King said, "I believe that I may have led my people into a burning building."
Yes, he did. He sure said that.
And so that's my impression of Dr. King today. Though I wasn't alive when he was assassinated, I do know that he made a mistake with integration.
Yes, sir. And, you know, we ought to have a round table one day with and talk about our great leaders, men and women, in the country and a few around the world. As Brother CJ mentioned, H-Rap Brown, who has now changed his name to Jamal Alameen. He's incarcerated out west as we speak. We believe trumped up charges because of his influence and how he had so many successes in the Black Panther Party back in the day. There's so much to talk about when it involves our people, and it should be talked about. The good, the bad, our opinions are respected, and they're different and they're similar, and it's all good. We're here at the Black Round Table at the end of it indeed, and we had lost Sister Yolanda, but it sounds like she is
back
now. Yes, ma'am. We saw the engineer had indicated that you dropped, and I was hoping that you would call back in. We are wrapping it up.
Yay.
Another informative show. Go ahead, ma'am.
I just wanted to say your engineer is on it, doggone it. So thank you. I thank your engineer.
He said the engineer is on it, doggone it. Make no mistake about it. We couldn't move anywhere without Queen and the other engineers that come in and make our radio station the success that we're being blessed with. I want to thank all of our guests. Again, I wasn't trying to be rude, because I know we could talk all night long about going down memory lane and our stories. I mentioned a lot about Brother Charleston White and that fantastic interview. I'm not saying it because he did it on our airways. I'm saying it because it's true. Brother Charleston White has a story for anyone and everyone to hear, because he is really just getting started in what his mission and assignment is from Almighty God. We heard of some of his past, but to hear him today and what he is doing, if God permits him tomorrow, is just extraordinary. Make no mistake about it. So Brother CJ also walked, talked, and was influenced by the great prince himself, and I'm talking about Malcolm X. Brother CJ has a show that everyone, go to page 1 here on Near 2X Radio, The Voice of the People, and hear Brother CJ describe what it was like to see Malcolm, to hear Malcolm, to be influenced by Malcolm X, and to be at the rallies, and how he felt and what Malcolm X was able to do just by words. We're talking words, and those words making people be active. Okay, so we're going to wind it up. if you could say maybe in two, no more than 3 minutes, because we need to know what is going on with black people in and around America. So we'll start with you, Brother Charleston White. What's going on that black people need to know about in Dallas-Fort Worth?
Well, Sister, I may be a little off topic, but since, you know, we are in the political season, we're talking about politics, and I just want to remind black folks about the Clintons. I want black people to know that even though almost 100% of our votes are going Democratic to Hillary Clinton, but we have to remember that it was Bill Clinton who implemented this infamous crime bill that has went through America and destroyed the black community, black homes, black families, and black children. It is
about three strikes you're in.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Bill Clinton is the author of that crime bill. It is the Clintons' buddies. It is the Clinton machine who is endorsed by the private prison industry that is profiting off of the incarceration of black people. So I just want to remind people who the Clintons really are. And if we believe that we can continue to vote blindly as Democrats without any demands for our votes, we're going to keep getting what we're getting.
All right, very well said. That is Brother Charleston White. Brother Charleston White is holding it up for the Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas area, and we're grateful that you called in. Let's move to Sister Yolanda. What's going on concerning black people in the ATL, ma'am?
Well, here in the ATL, we have people that are not participating in the voting process, and we're trying to get the vote out, particularly with the young people. We pretty much have to go with the lesser of two evils. That's what we are trying to invoke here, because we have a governor that is trying to take over. It's called the Opportunity School District. We have a governor that's trying to be a czar. You know, he wants to control all of the failing schools. And the reason the schools are failing here is because they don't have equitable supplies. They don't have books. They don't have the best teachers. Mm. In some of the neighborhoods in the metro Atlanta area, I live in the suburbs of Atlanta. However, these children, I volunteer, and I've said this, I think, before on your first show, that the children here in a lot of the communities are not learning. I go out and I volunteer in the schools. It's called Real Women Read, and then they have Real Men Read. So we go in and we read to the young people. And at least one out of three of the young ladies that I read with can't read. One out
what
of three
grade are the children?
Four.
And please tell us what this governor name is, so if we see him crop up trying to be president one day, we know a whole lot about him.
He is a crook, in my opinion. His name is Nathan Deal. I can't even give him the props to call him governor because I didn't vote for him. But his name is Nathan Deal, and this man went into office about to go on the verge of bankruptcy. He was in a legislator years ago and was removed amidst controversy and criminal ethics violations. Yet the people here did not vote. This man won by approximately 20,000 votes, and over 260,000 African Americans didn't even bother to go to the polls.
What were the ages of the children that couldn't read? And we'll move to Brother
sorry.
CJ.
They were in third graders. These are third graders. So
very interesting very interesting from Brother Charleston White, and we just heard from Sister Yolanda calling and telling us what's going on with black people in her area. In the Big Apple, what's happening in New York City?
Well, in the Big Apple today, in the area that I've been working strong in, the mass incarceration area, the war on drugs, it was called. It came out in the papers today that the war on drugs was designed and perpetrated by President Richard Nixon specifically to incarcerate blacks for drug crimes, period.
What paper put that out, sir? So
the New York Daily News. It's on the front page. That's the crack in the dam. We're going to put the dynamite in there because now you have discrimination intent. That has been the only thing that you could not prove about the war on drugs, that they intended it, to do it. Now we have criminal intent.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that newspaper. What paper?
The New York Daily News.
Oh, okay, okay. I don't read it anyway, but it's just for somebody that maybe want to follow up on it and continue.
You
got
to follow up on that because this is going
to
bring our legal battles into court now.
And right here in Washington, D.C., where I am calling from, they have just bombarded us, just flooded us with information about this election and has taken our attention off of what is going on with black people in Flint, Michigan, being poisoned. Over 100,000 people have been poisoned under the wicked guidance of their governor, Rick Snyder, who was here last week in Washington, D.C. Reverend Sharpton from the National Action Network brought buses down from Detroit, from Flint, from New York, and it was just horrible how this man, Rick Snyder, just threw the blame on the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, and they threw the ball back, and yet 60% of those poisoned are black people in Flint, Michigan, and 40% are far, far under the poverty line. Major media is not reporting the impact of the suffering of black men, black women, and all people that are suffering under the decision. Rick Snyder, he was the governor at the time. This has been going on for 2 years. So Washington, D.C., and others, we are, the blacks anyway, we are very concerned about over 100 people literally, seriously poisoned. Not just a little bit. They do not, as we speak, have drinking water, can't flush their toilets. And there's a lady on tomorrow here on NIA2X Radio. She'll be on around 12:30 p.m. in the afternoon updating us about this horrific, unbelievable crime of the century, Flint, Michigan. I want to say thank you to all of our sponsors and thank all of the listeners. I want to say thank you to, indeed, our wonderful guest, Brother Charleston White from Fort
Worth. You're right, Dallas, Fort Worth there.
Huh?
Thank you for having me, sister. You know, anytime, it's always a pleasure to be able to come on here and drop some jewels and soak up some knowledge with you.
Yes, indeed. You have to come back, brother, because it's all about getting the truthful information out so people are not misled into thinking about information that really is not even relevant to your community, to yourself. And we just stay under the illusion of the people that control the media. So, you know, at NIA2X Radio, we want a part of the action to control it in the right way, you know, to do the thing right. Well, there's our cue. Indeed, I want to say thank you also to our hard-hitting sister, and that is, of course, Sister Yolanda calling in from Atlanta, Georgia. And our big brother, Brother Carl Johnson, we call him CJ, calling in from the Big Apple, putting it down. We went down memory lane, and we talked about also what's happening in your part of the world, in the country. Brothers and sisters, the struggle continues. It's either justice or else. let us continue to spend with those that look like us. Indeed, we are talking about financing and economically supporting quality, professional, black-owned businesses. It's a good idea. It's a smart idea, and it's the right idea. Let's move forward to wake up, to rise up, to get up, and to unite and pull our economic resources together. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his national representative, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, are leading the charge toward a true, full, and complete freedom for brothers and sisters worldwide. Also, you want to see the mission statement from VLB Productions, go to blackonblackunity.com or call 202-352-2121 or call Muhammad's Mosque number 4 in Washington, D.C. at 202-506-6940 to get on board, because the Justice or Else movement continues. Again, we want to say thank you to our fantastic guests, our sponsors, and we know we have to say thank you to the queen, our engineer tonight. She's on the wheel of steel, always making it happen, and she does it right. Thank you to the listening audience, and remember, power concedes nothing without a demand. And, of course, that was from our late, great Frederick Douglass. So keep it right here and hear our shows, and we appreciate you all. Thank you to everybody, and be peaceful.